Ephesians chapter 5, we're going to go a little bit different direction than what I'm normally covering on Wednesdays. We will get back to that, Lord willing, next week. But wanted us to look at an area that I think can be an encouragement, a help. One of the challenges that you face as you're in college and many opportunities come along, many, many good opportunities. And how do we make the right decisions? How do we develop really a godly character? So I want us to consider this morning the area of walking in wisdom with the idea that character matters. That our desire is to raise up a generation that will stand in a wicked day. And that takes character. When we lived in Maine, we had a two-story house and we moved when our children were very young. And all of our bedrooms were upstairs. Ours was at one end, and then our sons had their bedroom, and then Caitlin's was down the hall a little bit. But when I would go downstairs in the morning, you know, I was walking by their bedrooms. And when a house, you know, is built, they get our, you know, everything's nice and tight. But as it ages, things kind of shift a little bit. And there were certain boards that if you stepped in a certain place, that they would make noise. And the last thing I wanted to do was wake up the kids when they were young and they were sleeping. The rule in our house was if you wake them up, you have to play with them. And that's what my wife would tell me when I'd come home and I want to play with the kids. Like, you wake them up, you play with them. It's like, okay. And so we, you know, there were places that I had to be careful to step. In fact, when our carpet got old and we were replacing it and I'd had somebody come in, they gave us a quote and they said, well, we can do the tear out. And I said, no, I'm tearing it out. Because what I didn't tell them was when I tear it out, I'm gonna screw the boards down. The problem is they use nails. Well, nails start to work loose after a while. So I said, I'm gonna bring in my drill and I'm gonna screw them down every foot along the studs to try to tighten that up. So I went through that room and I screwed everything down and it still would squeak. And it's like, it has to be somewhere in the wall, that connection, which I couldn't get to because I'm doing it on both sides. And so every time I'd have to be careful where I would step. And you learn, okay, you're walking down the hall, don't step there. Well, that's really the idea that we find in Ephesians. It speaks of how we walk. Ephesians 5, look with me at verse 17. Verse 15, we'll come down to 17. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. It'll continue on, but I want us to just stop there for the moment and look at the context of what's taking place. Ephesians gives us three chapters of doctrine of what Christ is doing in the church, what God is doing through the church. Talks about our walk in the first three chapters as well, though I'm not going to draw our attention to that this morning. And then three chapters of application. Now, one of our dangers, and I just encourage you young people, understand the entire context of the book. Because what's easy for us to do, and I did it for a while as a preacher, is we jump to chapters 4, 5, and 6, because that's the practical. That's where the rubber meets the road. It talks about husbands and wives. It talks about raising your children. It talks about the spiritual battle. And all of that is tremendously helpful. But if we're not careful, we lose sight of the context that it's within the umbrella of the local church. The thing that strengthens marriage is being part of a local church. You can read all the details in Ephesians 5, but if you're missing chapters 1 through 3, it's what God is doing in the church. That the marriage relationship is a picture of Christ in the church, and if we're not part of the church and we're not seeing the big picture, we're missing a significant part of raising children, part of a church. And in our daily walk, walking different from the world, that we're redeeming the time, that we're walking in the Spirit. All of this is in the context, the big umbrella of the church. In fact, this was really driven home to me when I realized at the very end of the first three chapters of all of this, the very first statement in chapter 4, where we're getting to the application, it says, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the calling with which you are called. Okay, so how do I walk worthy? Well, I have my devotions. I pray. That's not where it goes. It goes to interpersonal relationships immediately. Because the truth is, I usually feel I'm doing pretty good spiritually until somebody else doesn't do what I want. It's like, what's wrong with them? And that's where we start to find out, you know what? I still have to grow. And so it goes right into, you know, you'd think, okay, here's all that God's doing in the church. Here's what Christ has done in saving you, that we're saved not by works, but unto good works. Okay, so I need to be a student of the Word. Now it says in verse 2, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long suffering, bearing with one another in love. That I suffer long. I endure. I put up with. And it's not just gritting my teeth saying, okay, I can get through this. Couple more months, couple more hours. No, it's in love. So it's not just can I hang on, it's can I do it with the right spirit? So it speaks of walking worthy of our calling. Then it tells us we're to walk differently than the unsaved. That's in verse 17. I testify to the Lord that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles. And it's going to expand on that. But as Christians, we walk differently than the unsaved. Then it says in verse 1 of chapter 5, or verse 2, that we're to walk in love. Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children, and walk in love, as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us. Again, see how it's building on the first three chapters. And recognizing we're to walk in love, and now, then in verse 8, it's we're to walk in light. You were once darkness, but now are you light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Don't walk like the children of the dark. And you see the contrast through all of this. And then we come to our passage, verse 15, walk circumspectly. Now, what does the word circumspectly mean? Not a word that we use real often. You need to be circumspect. Huh? What's that mean? Any ideas? What? Walk carefully. The idea is that we're to be careful. It's like walking down the hall and trying to avoid that noisy spot in the floor. Now, I've got the whole hall. I mean, it's all carpeted. But there were certain places that if I wanted my kids to continue to sleep, I couldn't step there. And the idea here is that we're to be careful, that we're to walk conscientiously or carefully. The idea, and really what we're looking at, and where I want us to see now, is going to move then to conscientious walk, and we're going to look at that briefly as well, when it says redeeming the time. That we have to be wise because we recognize the evil. In the context here, we're not just going to step on a board that makes noise. We're going to step off the path. We're going the wrong direction. Be wise because the days are evil. And so we have to be wise and respond appropriately. Now looking back at verse 15, it's interesting. It says, see then that you walk circumspectly. See that you walk carefully, that we're to be careful. And there's debate among some commentators. Does the word carefully refer to see or to walk? Does it refer to look carefully, or does it refer to walk carefully? And I think from what I've already given you, you know which way I think the interpretation is. But are we to look carefully or live carefully? And I think it really is an emphasis on how we live. Believers are to live carefully so that we are pleasing God. And this is the idea here, that we want to be careful, because it lays out for us the opposites. That we're to be wise. That we're to walk as children of light. That we're to, as it says in verse 15, not as fools, but as wise. Not as asophos, but as sophos. That's the literal Greek. Sophos, wise, wisdom. And the opposite of that, sophos. And that's how it's laid out. Now, we say, okay, so we're to walk wisely. And really what we're seeing here is the idea of character. There's different definitions and there's multiple of ideas out there, but some have said reputation is what people think you are. Character is what God knows you to be. Character is what God knows that we are, not what people think. Sometimes we get really concerned about our reputation. Oh, well, what will people think? Well, the real question is, what does God think? Because He sees us. Reputation is what is chiseled. Somebody has said, reputation is what is chiseled on your tombstone. Character is what the angels say about you before the throne of God. Reputation is what people have that impression, but ultimately the real issue is, what does God know? It's been said, character is what you do when no one's watching. When people are watching, that's when we're concerned about reputation. When nobody's watching, that's between us and God, because He is still watching. And so we understand that the issue here is, are we walking in a way that is wise? Young people, understand that our character is formed in the mundane. It's revealed in the crisis. It's formed in the everyday choices. And most of our lives are lived in mundane things. You know, there are big decisions, but those aren't every day. I was joking with you that as we canceled school for give you a day of rest, that I'm getting all these questions, but they weren't hard questions. Well, yes, we still have to cover dual enrollment classes. So our professors need to be here for that, because that's a TCA issue, and we have to make sure we're fulfilling our obligations, that we're not putting others in a bind simply because we're trying to solve this. Well, what do we do in this situation? Yes, we're going to cancel that as well. Well, no, we're not going to do that. Oh, yes, we need to communicate. Those were easy questions. It wasn't, wow, you know, I need to really stop and pray about this. Should we cover dual enrollment? Yes, because we have a I didn't need to pray about that. Because it's a responsibility that we have. You know, we go through a lot of life making decisions that will develop our character. Well, you know, I'm too tired to do this. Well, I don't really want to do that. Okay, but should I do it? Because your character is formed in the mundane. That's where we live. It's revealed in pressure. But that's not where it's formed. That we will not faint in the day of adversity, because if we do, our strength is small. That it's the preparation. It's the, you know, if somebody is trying to build muscle strength, it's a lot of repetition. That they're preparing for something. And it's in that moment of when the issue comes in the big game or whatever it is, that then it's revealed. Have they prepared? That's what we find in daily issues. And this is why it's important that we be developing this, that we be thinking this way. That we understand what is going on here. A person that we're speaking of, the contrast between those who are wise and foolish. A person can be mentally bright and morally deficient. They can be mentally brilliant and spiritually dumb. Spiritual eyes are not the same as the ability to know facts. We don't want to be a generation that is wise in our own eyes. We want to walk in godly wisdom. And ultimately, the Bible tells us the supreme fool is the person who has an anti-God thinking and living patterns. We see that in Romans 1, that when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful. They became vain in their imagination, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. They thought they were wise. And we live in a world like that, because unsaved people do not have spiritual perception. the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God. In fact, if you ask the average unsaved person why they are here on this earth, what do you think they'd say? Most probably have not given it much thought at all. Some might be, well, I want to have a good time. Eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow you die. Live for the moment. You know, some might have a more altruistic viewpoint. Well, I need to help mankind. What does that mean? You know, how? Because it sounds really nice in the nebulous. But what does it actually mean? And understanding that for us as believers, we ought to be able to answer that question. If we're walking carefully, not as the asophos, the unwise, but as wise. And that when we understand this, that we're seeking to glorify God, we're seeking to bring Him honor. So when we speak of character, understanding that it really is this aspect, that character is formed in the decisions of life, in our priorities. I mean, if we were to lay out our priorities, what should be first? Our walk with God. That we would say, yes, that ought to be first. And what comes after that will depend at times on where we are in life. You know, if we're married, then our family and or our ministry or our work and recognizing, well, yes, we have to have a priority list. I've put them in a list here, but years ago, what really helped me was to realize when you think of it as number one, two, three, four, that's rather difficult. Because there are times where things just don't line up quite that way. And what was really helpful for me was to think of it more in circles. God has to be at the center of everything. And from that, there are other circles, or there might even be spokes with areas. But there will be times where because of one thing or another, time's going to have to give. So if I were to say, well, you know, God comes first and my family second and then other needs. And I came home one night when I was pastoring. It was on a Wednesday night. I came, you know, I'd usually come in, grab a quick bite to eat, and then we turn right around and go back to church. And I came home, and as I got home, the phone rang and I picked it up, and it was our local police department. And they asked who I was. I identified myself, yes. And they said, do you know? And they named a family. And I said, yes. They said, they've asked if you would come. Their son committed suicide. They said, how soon can you be here? I said, well, just give me a few minutes. I can come right now. I didn't say, you know what? That's family comes before ministry. And this is family time. I mean, we usually eat together. Absolutely not. And if I were simply looking at a list, it's like, well, which one comes above the other? No, when it's a circle, if God is at the center, this is the need of the moment. And I may have to pull from family time for this. And to go and to meet with that family and to cry with them and to pray with them and then to do that funeral. And our church was packed with unsaved co-workers, fellow students, teachers, employers, and the opportunity to share the gospel. Why? Because God was at the center. There will be times, because the truth is, young people, as you're seeking to serve the Lord and as you're training for ministry, there will be more good opportunities than you can do. There will be more options than you can do. And you have to say, okay, so if God is at the center, what is the next right thing for me? I mean, I used to struggle with, because you get these mailings from all these companies asking for money. Good organizations, doing good things, fighting cancer, helping meet needs, and we'd get phone calls, and thankfully, you know, then they came up with the do not call list, and that helped shut down some of that. But I would get calls, well, can you give to this? And I said, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing. But we give over 10% of our gross, and it is much higher than that, but I would use that number. I said, to our church ministry. And I appreciate what you're doing, but I'm just not able to give to that. Say, well, why'd you give them the percentage? Because I figured the person calling me wasn't giving nearly that much to any organization. And so they're already, well, you know, they've got the spiel they're supposed to say, but they also know they're not really doing all that. But what I had to realize is the unsaved people are not going to give to our church. So I hope they'll give to these causes because they're good causes. Now, there are some causes I won't give to because they're not good causes. We live in an evil day. Evil people want money. And Satan doesn't seem to have a shortage of it. But I can only give to certain things. And so I have to prioritize. And I have to do it according to what will honor the Lord. I was sitting in somebody's home once and they said, you know, we just don't have enough money to tithe. And I'm looking at their cable box on their television. And I said, well, you know, Time Warner was the cable company in that area. I said, probably what it takes to pay for monthly cable would be the decent amount of tithe on something. And I said, I'll just be honest with you. I don't want to stand before God and have to justify why I gave more to Time Warner than World Missions. What I was trying to say is, it's priorities. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And understanding that we're going to have to make those decisions, that it's going to be those challenges. And recognizing the need for that. So as you make decisions, young people, one of the things that we have to realize, and we say this at different times, but sometimes it gets lost in the noise of life, is when you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to others. If I say, yes, I'm going to give this amount of money to World Missions, then I'm saying, no, I can't give it to this. I can't spend it on myself. And in everything we do, if I say yes to one opportunity, I'm going to have to say no to others. And so we have to ask, what is it that God would have for me to do? We're to walk not only carefully, but we're to walk conscientiously, redeeming the time. This is an interesting statement because the question might be, well, what does time mean? Is Paul, as he's writing to the church at Ephesus under divine inspiration, saying, you know, watch the clock. You know, count the minutes. Now, sometimes we might do that in class, you know, at work. Okay, am I done yet? We do count minutes. That's not what it means. It's talking about the season, redeeming the season. It's not clock time, but opportunity. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 15, that's the faith chapter. It talks about how they went out and it says, if they had been thinking or mindful of the land from which they had gone, they would have had opportunity to return. They had time. They had the opportunity to go back, but they desired a better city, an heavenly one. So when Jesus said in John 7, verse 6, my time has not yet come, but your time is always here. This is not the opportunity yet for which he had come, but it was theirs. It's used in Matthew chapter 13, verse 30 to speak of the harvest. And so young people, what we have to have is a harvest mentality. Every day is a planting day, and every day is a reaping day. It tells us in Galatians that we're not to be deceived. God's not mocked. Whatever a man sows, he's going to reap. And then it goes on and says, he that sows to the flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. I'm watching, I'm looking at this website, I'm going to this, I'm doing this. Well, it's not hurting me now. You're planting seeds. And if you're planting seeds of the flesh, you're going to reap from the flesh. But the other side of that in Galatians is, he that sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap life everlasting. So, you know, I'm having my devotions, but I just don't feel like I'm getting a lot out of it. Keep planting. The harvest is coming. And the more you do it, the more you're developing the right patterns, the right habits. So we have to buy back the time. Don't waste it. One of our challenges, especially early in the semester, is, I got plenty of time to write that paper. I got plenty of time to read that book. I'd rather do this. This is more fun. And then all of a sudden it comes to the end of the semester and it's like, I don't have time. What book? Yeah. Where is it? Do they have an extra copy in the library that I can check out? I lost mine. We have to be redeeming the time. Planting today. See, that's character. That's using our time wisely. Understanding that every day is a planting day and every day is a reaping day. We reap today what we've sown in the past. And say, well, you know, I wish I wasn't. Well, then start planting spiritual fruit. Plant those spiritual seeds and reap that crop. Because God gives us the grace for that. We also need an investment mentality. That we're looking forward. That we're anticipating what's to come. That really what we're speaking of is we're taking those windows of opportunity. I worked in an apple orchard during high school, and there would be times, especially during the summer, where we didn't have pressing jobs. And so my boss would say, you know what, today let's do this. We'll work on this, or here's a project that I've been wanting to get done, or, you know, if you could do this for me. And he would come up with a list of jobs. And they weren't really pressing. They were things that, yeah, they kind of need to be done. It's helpful, you know, deferred maintenance or heading things off that won't happen. Once he was having a family reunion. His family would get together every couple of years, and they were having a family reunion, and I'm working for him, and he's having me mow the lawn at his house and help set things up for the family reunion. It's like, hey, I'll do whatever you want. I mean, I'm getting paid for it, but it's not really working in the orchard. I'm helping him get ready for his family reunion. And they had around 75, 76 people show up. But it wasn't pressing. But when the fall came, our jobs were pressing. When the fruit was ready to be picked, when the apples were on the tree, when the fruit was ripe, that wasn't a time I could come say, you know, Mr. Smith, would it be okay if I take a couple weeks off? Yeah, I'm just tired. You know, I worked, you know, that family reunion back in July, that really tired me out. I'm still feeling the effects of that. And could I have a couple weeks off? What do you think he would say? Probably just take the rest of the time off. Never come back. Because when it's harvest time, that's not the time to stop. Those were the times where we're trying to find extra help. We're hiring other people. Can you come in and just work for a couple of weeks? Can you help with this? We would hire an entire crew to come in and pick the fruit, and then I'd drive tractors. Why? Because it's harvest time. Redeeming the time. Understanding how important this is. And ultimately, young people recognize that the most important thing we can do is be dependable. One of the things that was drilled into me in college was the greatest ability is dependability. Are you dependable? You know, if you have certain work hours, show up. Say, well, I'm not feeling well. Then you better contact your supervisor and work that out, but maybe you have to do it anyway. Sometimes we have to do ministry when we're tired. You know, we live in a day when people are so undependable that if you just show up, you can pretty much have a job. That we will do what we're supposed to say. Well, it's not going to really make much difference. It will in your character. So, you know, why bother with this assignment? Be dependable. Well, I've already got the grade I'm going to get. Yeah, but do it. It's for your character. It may not change your grade, but it may change your life. Because when the pressure comes, that's when our character's revealed. Are we dependable? We have to be careful with the time. We have to be cautious because the days are evil. We live in a wicked day. And it doesn't take much to see that. I watched the president's speech last night. It really was a good speech. But what was amazing to me is, and he was very direct about the wickedness of abortion and late-term abortion, and you've got an entire party that will not clap. When he says all life, born and unborn, is made in the image of a holy God. To not be able to clap to that says we live in an evil day. When we have political rulers who won't even protect innocent life, That's the god Moloch. I mean, that's really where we are. And I appreciate it. There's a lot of things with our president that I do not agree with. But I appreciated how clearly he spoke to the importance of life, the sanctity of life. And to see that contrast is just a reminder we live in an evil day. So don't be careless. Don't be unwise. Be dependable. The greatest ability is dependability. And we've only covered part of this, but I want to put this on your radar. The text then goes on and really is challenging us to walk in the Spirit. The terminology speaks of being filled with the Spirit. We often refer to it as walking in the Spirit. Because if we're going to be faithful, we're not going to do it in our own strength. As I began, I said, you know, there are times we end up doing things in ministry where we're just too tired. But we have to trust the Lord. One of the things that really helped me is I traveled one summer. I was with Neighborhood Bible Time, and we'd go to different churches, and we were doing the children's program, and it was exhausting. And I remember many times saying, I don't have the strength to do this. Week after week, day after day, getting up in front of, sometimes 100 little kids, and your energy level has to be way up here, because if you don't, it's going to be up for grabs. I mean, it's going to be a free-for-all. And I said, I don't have that. I have to say, I have to trust the Lord. And if I don't do it, there's nobody else who will. I can't say, well, somebody else will step in. No, because that was my job and there was nobody else. And so to have to be dependable. And that was one of the things the Lord taught me that summer, to trust in Him, to rely on Him, and to be dependable. Young people, thank you for your faithfulness. But don't be weary in doing well. You're planting. And God will give the strength, and He will give the increase. That we will be people of character. And really, for a Christian, character is Christ-likeness. That should be our goal. Let's pray together. Father, we thank You that You call us and use us. I thank You for these young people, their willingness to serve, and even at a time when they have many things going, the spirit that we have seen demonstrated of the desire to share the gospel, Lord, I pray that You would give them strength. I pray that what we have considered this morning would encourage all of us to not quit, to walk wisely, carefully, and that we would recognize the seasons that we have to redeem the time. And that all of this would be for Your glory, that we would be able to hear, well done. Because we were dependable servants. For it is in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.